Welcome to Cyberside Chats from Epic, a global legal services provider. Hosted by Jarek Beeson, Chief Information Security Officer at Epic, Cyberside Chats is where professionals come to hear CISO and industry leader insights on the latest news and trends for cybersecurity and privacy in the legal industry.
Welcome to Epic Cyberside Chat, where we are excited to be developing content for and by the legal and privacy industries. You know, there's a lot of cybersecurity content in media, but we believe there's a gap when it comes to the legal industry, and we're seeking to address that with our show. My name is Jarek Beeson. I'm a Senior Vice President and the Chief Information Security Officer over at Epic, and I will be your host. And this is episode 4, so I think that means we should be getting a little bit better at this. Drop a comment and let us know what you think. Our past few guests have been people that I've known in my career and directly throughout my network or my extended network. But today we have a guest that's brought to us by the power of LinkedIn. And I'm proud to say he is now part of my network. AJ Yan is our guest today, and he is the co-founder and CEO of ByteCheck. He's a seasoned cloud security professional that possesses over a decade of senior information security experience with extensive experience managing a wide range of cybersecurity compliance assessments, SOC 2, ISO 27000, HIPAA, among a few of them. And he's done it for a variety of SaaS, IaaS, and PaaS providers, and that means cloud providers. AJ advises startups on cloud security and serves on the board of directors for the ISC Squared Miami chapter, as well as the education chair. He is also a founding board member of the National Association of Black Compliance and Risk Management Professionals. He regularly speaks on information security podcasts, such as ours, events, and he contributes to blogs and articles, one we're going to talk about today. And he also contributes to publications for CISO Magazine, Information Security Magazine, and Hacker Noon. AJ, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Jarek. It's a pleasure to join you on this podcast and speak to the legal profession and join you, you know, as a leader in this space. Talking to you about security is always fun. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, absolutely. So is there anything I haven't told the users about yourself or our listeners about yourself that you would want to share?
Yeah, you know, I think there's two things. One, the first half of my career, I started in the U.S. Army. So I'm a veteran. I'm very, you know, happy and proud of my service. It was a fun time. And I learned a lot there that has transitioned into my career. And the other is I'm a former athlete. I played basketball at Florida State. And that was my path to school. So I wasn't destined for cybersecurity. I thought I was destined for the NBA, but I wasn't good enough. You know, I those are two facts that aren't well known about me that I think be interesting for folks to hear.
Well, first and foremost, thank you for your service, the work that you've done, the work that you did, or the reasons why we are able to do things like a podcast on Friday today. So for those that aren't familiar with our show, we always start with an article, and that article will be the basis for the topic of the show. And AJ wrote an article about a year ago entitled, How Law Firms Can Demonstrate Strong Cybersecurity Practices. And we'll have a link to that article in the show notes below for you to go ahead and take a look for yourself. And, you know, as I looked at it, you know, there are a lot of good points on it. And you make an argument that a SOC 2 is the best way for law firms to demonstrate their cybersecurity maturity. Now, there's a ton of security frameworks out there. Why SOC 2?
Yeah, so the reason with SOC 2 is that because when you're providing this report, you're providing a third-party assurance report saying, hey, to my customers, to my vendors, to my investors, whoever it may be, I'm secure. I'm doing things that are helping me be secure. When it comes to SOC 2, it's the only report out of all these other frameworks that's actually going to go into the details of what the system is. What are we actually evaluating? What are the controls? What did the auditor test? How did they test them? And what were the results? A lot of the other frameworks, you're going to get a certificate or you're going to get an executive summary or you're not going to get a lot of the details behind what actually was done. And then also, is this relevant to the thing that you're selling me? If you're a law firm and you want to talk a lot about your services that you're using, the tools that you're using, your team and how you have embedded security into your team, you can't really describe that in an ISO 27001 certification because it's just a certificate. Whereas SOC 2 is what it's called is an attestation report, which outlines this is the scope of the system. Here is exactly what this law firm does. Here are the technologies they're using, and here's how we tested things, which is why I think SOC 2 is beneficial because it's, as a law firm, as people in the legal profession, you do want to make sure you're communicating the right things to your customers and end users because they're not the same customers and end users as everyone else that's out there in these other industries.
So it sounds like if I really want to know what organization is doing from a security perspective, and I want the details about how they're doing it, why they're doing it, and the scope of the system, the SOC 2 is the way to go. If that's the case, why are all these other frameworks out there? Why are organizations requiring these other frameworks?
Yeah, it becomes this chase. I like to call all the compliance frameworks alphabet soup. Because people just start chasing letters and they just start collecting all these letters and saying, I want to be ISO, HIPAA, HITRUST, CSA STAR, SOC 2, all these different things. And honestly, they're all saying the same things. They all are saying, do vulnerability scans, do penetration testing, do make sure the right people have access to your systems, like somebody that shouldn't have access shouldn't be in there. They're all saying the same things. The reason why there's so many is because of the different industries that you're selling to. If you're selling in the EU, ISO 27001 is going to be beneficial because they're going to want to see that. The European Union customers are going to want to see that you have an ISO certification. If you're selling to healthcare, you're going to need to do some kind of HIPAA, some kind of analysis there. But those are very specific for a specific industry, where SOC 2 is going to answer a wide variety of questions about your cybersecurity program and let you be really customized with it. A HIPAA assessment is going to be focused on healthcare. An ISO 27001 assessment is only focused on your information management system. A SOC 2 can be focused on whatever you want it to be focused on. You can describe your system and say, here's the system that I got evaluated, and here's what I want to test associated with that system. So there's a lot more flexibility, which is why I think it's the most useful, because a lot of these other frameworks, I don't think they fit pretty with law firms. They don't fit pretty in the legal profession because they're very generic and cookie cutter based off of technology, SaaS-based companies. SOC 2, you can literally say, I only want to be tested on this component of my business, or I want to be tested on all these components. And you can describe that scope and describe it in a way that your users can understand. It's in very common, easy-to-read language as well.
You know, you make an interesting point because you have the flexibility to scale up or scale down your assessment. And that brings me to the position of the reader of the SOC 2 when you're assessing another organization. I don't think that most people understand that there is a scope component to it. And for many people, it's a checkbox. Do you have a SOC 2 type 2? Yes. Okay. You're allowed in. What recommendations would you make to an organization that's evaluating a supplier or a vendor and reading their SOC 2?
Yeah, normally the first thing that people do, they'll flip to section 4 of the report, which are all where all the controls and the results of tests are. And all they're doing are looking to see, were there any issues? Did I find any issues? Don't go there first. That's the least of your concern. Start in section 3. Section 3, the first section of section 3 is going to be overview of services provided. If in that first paragraph you don't hear the services that you are buying or using from that vendor, the SOC 2 report's not useful for you. It's not going to matter what their auditor said. If you know, hey, I'm using this tool and I know they told me it's hosted in Amazon Web Services, and you look into Section 3 and you don't see anything about Amazon Web Services, this report's probably not the report for you. So I encourage anyone that picks up a SOC 2 report, don't worry so much about the results of the test. Don't worry so much about what the overall opinion was from the CPA. Go to Section 3 and say, is this relevant to the scope of what I'm actually using for this organization? And then from there, start diving into other things. But you have to verify that the SOC 2 report is on, and that's the thing about ISO certs. ISO certs can be on an ISMS, which is literally, you can say, my management system are these four people in this little office, in this building, in this facility. And I have a 5,000 person company. But that's my ISMS. That's my management system right there. And now you have this ISO 27001 certification. Obviously, there's ethical concerns there, and people should be doing the right things. But you never know. You can just be getting a cert where SOC 2 is going to truly outline and say, here is what we are saying we do, and here's the system that we're saying that we protected and these auditors looked at. And if it's not the system that you bought or are using, then you need to go ask for more details about their security.
You know what? I think that's really helpful. And I know somebody's benefiting from this, and some supplier is going, dang, they figured it out. So you use the term CPA, and you know, when people hear CPA, they think the person that does my taxes. So what is the relationship between the CPA and the SOC 2, and how can the tax guy determine a technology audit?
It's such an interesting dynamic when people find out that CPAs are heavily involved in cybersecurity assessments. It's the weirdest thing. It was weird for me when I found out. What happened is that typically financial audits happen annually, right? And a part of those financial audits, there are some IT general controls that are tested. There are some controls around privileged access and systems and things like that. And the AICPA, the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, obviously produces standards associated with those financial audits, right? They decided a few years ago there needs to be a separate report. There needs to be something else for service organizations, for people that are providing a service to other folks, that they can get evaluated on just cybersecurity, not financial stuff as well as cybersecurity. So what they created back then was called a SAS 70 report. It's transitioned into SSA E16 and now SSA E18. All that to say, it's called SOC 2, but it's created by the AICPA. And it has, so since they created the standards, they say this has to be issued by a certified public accountant and a CPA firm who has gone through all these requirements and associated with peer reviews. And the benefit there, and it's not, I'll say two things. One, it's not your tax guy doing it. If your tax guy's doing your SOC 2, that's bad. That's really bad. You want to have an actual CPA who's been doing this, because there are CPAs that don't do anything with taxes. They don't do anything with finances anymore. They are solely just IT general controls or information technology auditors, and that's all they do all the time. So there's all the huge aspects of large CPA firms that only do this assurance work. And the CPA has to go through some rigorous stuff to be able to actually issue a SOC 2 report, which is great, because the SOC 2 report is not actually a compliance framework. It's called a reporting framework. And what that means is that all of the testing, all of the documentation, all of the little, it's kind of like the legal profession. One word can determine if you did this right, and if you didn't do it right, their CPA's license is on the line. It's that detailed. And so there's a whole lot of quality review and quality assurance that goes into a SOC 2 report, which then gives comfort to your customers that, hey, I know a CPA had to go through a ridiculous amount of stuff and checklists and QA and paperwork just to get this report out to verify that everything that they're saying in here is true. So it was created by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. It's a way that they wanted to help some of the financial and accounting industry be able to do cybersecurity testing without doing financial audits. And it's exploded as kind of the de facto standard to do business with other businesses in the U.S. I look at SOC 2 the same way I look at ISO 27001 in the EU, where if you're doing business in the U.S., you're going to get asked about SOC 2. It's just one of those things that's going to come up.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so you've convinced me, you've convinced others, we got to have a SOC 2. I Google SOC 2 certification, and I'm prompted with type 1 or type 2. What's the difference?
The difference is a type 1 is a point-in-time report. It means that your auditor, your CPA came in and said, you have these controls in place at this specific point in time. Whereas a type 2 is going to say, you have these controls in place. And when I say a control, it's a risk mitigating activity. That's all it is. A control is just saying, I'm doing something to help make a risk reduce itself, go down or mitigate it a little bit lower. So you have these controls, and in a SOC 2 type 2, those controls are being evaluated over up to a 12-month period of time, doing some testing that we call operational effectiveness. So we're seeing, did your controls operate effectively over a period of time in a type 2? Typically, the normal path is you start, you get a SOC 2 readiness, really just to figure out, where's my gaps, what do I need to do, where do I need to go next? And then the smart move is to do a SOC 2 type 1. The reason being is because it's going to be the fastest way to get a report in hand for your customers. It's going to be the least amount of effort from a team perspective. And just from a process standing up and getting things in order perspective, you want to knock out that type 1 first. And then annually thereafter, you would do a type 2, and your customers would expect the SOC 2 type 2. So you'd only do the readiness and the type 1 one time. Oftentimes, I do hear people skip the type 1. They're like, oh, it doesn't matter. It's a point-in-time report. Why would I do that? That doesn't make any sense. I would caution against that. I would always caution people to caution against jumping into a type 2 when you see that, because yes, it's only, you only have to do the report one time instead of doing two different reports. But the first time you're ever going to have an auditor look at stuff is going to be over a period of time, over 6 months. You're just going to expect that everyone in the organization has everything in place and nothing's going to go bad. You probably want to give, you know, a little bit of a crawl, walk, run. You know, my Army background, that's what we always used to do with every exercise. You crawl first, you walk, and then you run. And that's how I see SOC 2. You crawl with the readiness, you walk with the type 1, and then you're running from there with your type 2. But those are the differences. It's the most common that you see is definitely readiness type 1 to type 2.
You know, that makes a lot of sense. And if I were to break that down into layman's terms, The type one is, do I have the controls defined that will mitigate risk? And the type two is, have I proven that those controls are actually working over a period of time?
Exactly. Exactly. Yep.
AJ, thank you for helping us understand the SOC 2. It's complex if you've never done it before. It's confusing if you've never read a report before. But I think you've given our listeners some good pointers and at least the basic principles on how to navigate the SOC 2 world and how to demonstrate, you know, the quality of your security program, whether you're a law firm or any other organization. And more importantly, we've talked about supply chain risk in the past, but SOC 2 is one of the ways that you can, you know, really manage your supply chain. We talk about, you know, questionnaires being a point in time. The SOC 2, at the very least, shows you that over a 6 to 12 month period that your supplier has demonstrated quality security. So thank you for that, AJ.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to, I'm one of those people that enjoy SOC 2. So if anybody, you know, ever wants to just talk about SOC 2, I'm the person to bring it up because I, for some reason, enjoy this stuff. So appreciate the conversation on it.
I thought I understood you until you made that statement. I don't understand how someone can enjoy it, the life of an auditor. But we need you guys. So all you auditors out there, keep auditing. All right. So we're moving into the next round of our format, which is the Ask the CISO round. And I know we have some interesting information out there that you wanted to talk about, AJ. What's up?
Yeah, you know, there's the most recent cybersecurity executive order, and I think it would just be really interested to hear from you, Jarek, and from the community, what your thoughts are on this executive order. You know, did it go far enough? Is it going to move the needle? Is it going to do anything? What does it mean for an organization like yourself and everyone else out there when they hear cybersecurity executive order? What should they be thinking about?
So for those listening, I'm not sure when this is going to get aired, but the executive order was signed 2 days ago. I believe it was May 12th. And in my opinion, it was overdue. We've needed to really push harder on security. And, you know, the next step is going to be regulation. Hopefully this is enough and we don't have to get there. But this order really raises the bar on security for federal networks, as well as for the suppliers of those federal networks. I think the document was 34 pages. And I've read other cyber executive orders or just executive orders in general, and combined, every cybersecurity executive order doesn't even include 34 pages. So this is a really comprehensive document. It's ambitious. The timelines are incredible, but it's just a reminder of how dire, you know, the situation is when it comes to cyber criminals. You know, we're really talking about cyber criminals more so than we're talking about nation states right now. The ransomware epidemic, which has been called, it's funded and it's led by criminal organizations all over the world, and it's getting easier for them to have access to the tools and the platforms to do it. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what materializes from this. Right now it's all paper, but if done well, if this thing is executed, we're going to see a dramatic improvement in the U.S. For our government security systems. What I'm really interested to see is how this trickles down and what the impact is on the private sector. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I do. You know, I was listening to a senior advisor in the White House talking about this, and that was one of their points about how, because there's so much shared software between the federal government and the private sector, and not just software, you know, shared infrastructure, when we think about cloud providers, it's only going to have downstream impacts. And a lot of the stuff in the executive order, improving incident response, improving supply chain security, removing barriers to information sharing, these are things, like you said, are overdue. We need this, and we need everyone to be on the same page, because the lines of government versus civilian information networks are no longer there. They're going to be blurred because the technology is used by everyone. And we've seen the impacts of private technology in both the federal space and in the private sector being hacked, and what it would mean for those organizations. So I think this is it's an important step. You know, I think obviously politics and things in that space move slow. So cybersecurity doesn't, and bad actors don't. So the bad actors don't care about a 34-page executive order. They're going to still go in there and break into systems, which means there has to be a sense of urgency here. There has to be the same sense of urgency that kind of kicked into overdrive with the pandemic when people really started to take it serious and mobilizing resources. We need to see the same thing with cybersecurity, because we're seeing the impact of it in, with all the recent stuff going on in the news this week, of how this can touch individuals' lives at its core. And so, you know, I agree with you that, you know, it's well overdue. I think there is, it's inevitable that the civilian sector will be impacted by this. How? I'm not sure. I just really hope there's not another compliance framework. That's the only thing I'm hoping for. Please, no more compliance frameworks. We have enough. We'll figure out a way to test this. Like, don't, let's not create another one. And this is coming from a compliance guy. I don't want to make any money off of any more compliance frameworks. We have enough of those. So let's just focus on security and get this done the right way, because it's important.
You know, you talk about the civilian impact, and a lot of people are going to look to the Colonial Pipeline attack and think 2 days, 3 days later, this executive order comes out. This must have been a retaliation to that, or a reaction to that. There's no way a 34-page executive order comes out in 3 days. Right. So this is something that's been in the works for a while. It's been bubbling up, and the timing was just right. Maybe it was accelerated a little bit, but this was something that's been out in a while. And, you know, when you look at it, it doesn't stop the Colonial Pipeline attack. Nothing in it is directly going to put any new responsibility on pipeline operators or people that operate water treatment facilities or people that, you know, operate the national grid. So to your point, we all use some of the same software. So because of that, hopefully we'll see a change. But my fear is, if I'm an organization and I want to service the government, I'm going to carve out a piece of my organization that will service the government. And I'm going to make sure that piece of my organization is compliant with all of these mandates. You know, you look at Microsoft, I guarantee you, when they do business with the government, the government's not looking at their entire network. They're looking at the specific Azure cloud that they're offering, AWS and their GovCloud and so forth. So the trickle-down effect that I think we're hoping for, maybe we'll work on the mom and pop companies because they're small enough and they can just do it. But the large players are just going to carve out sections specifically for that. And if that's the case, we're going to miss the mark what we're trying to do. It's much like what PCI was. When PCI first came out, if you were able to compartmentalize your payment card information, you could have a completely ransacked, completely compromised, completely vulnerable, really poorly run IT and security program, as long as those 15 systems that you do have payment card information on were compliant. And technically, that did help with the payment card data, but it didn't help with the greater good for cyber. And I'm worried that that may be the case here.
Agreed. I think that's why I'm against another compliance framework, because then everyone's just going to do, what do I have to do to meet it? And the best, easiest way is go carve some segment out of your environment, create a whole new environment, and say, this is all I want touched. But there always has to be people, processes, and involved in the technology testing. You can't focus solely on the tech. You have to understand, what are the people doing that are supporting the technology? What are the processes that are supporting them? How are they hiring people? How are they checking to see who these folks are? How are they offboarding people? All that stuff matters. And I'm with you. I think we will miss the mark if that's what happens, if it just continues. And I mean, we've already kind of seen it happen, right, with GovCloud and some of these other offerings. And I think if that starts to happen at the software level, where you see, you know, enterprise plan and then Gov plan, I'm going to want to know, if I'm an enterprise customer, what's the difference? and why do they have better security? I want that same level of security that you're giving the government. So hopefully that's what, you know, happens on the other end of this, right? Everyone is like, if you're going to improve your security to meet this new cyber executive order, I want that too. I don't want you just to do it just for DOD or whoever. Like, give me a piece of that new security too. And hopefully that forces organizations to not try to segment this out and just, you know, shut it down and put it all in the corner and get a nice pretty star at the end of the day.
You know, one of the components of that is, it's around threat information sharing. And I think threat can be construed a few different ways. The average person may think of all of the different, you know, malicious attacks and, you know, all the different indicators of those attacks. But I see threat information as vulnerabilities in your software, lack of compliance in with certain regulations. And if they want levels of transparency there, does that mean potentially that your SOC 2 report is no longer between you and your suppliers, and it gets shared with everybody so that everybody knows how you could be compromised? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, I think there needs to be a way that organizations can prove the security of their system in a real-time manner. I can go out and generate something at this point in time that tells me exactly how your system is performing. And I think there's ways that you can sanitize that. Definitely with automation that's out there right now in the compliance space that plugs in and connects directly to where you have all this information, you're going to be able to take that information and present it in a manner that doesn't expose you, but can show, hey, here's the good things that I'm doing. Here are the good security controls that I have in place. And as a supplier, you can make that decision. So I think there needs to get to some level of that transparency. I do still believe you need to have a SOC 2 that is under NDA because it does go into details that could potentially expose you. And really, the easiest thing for a hacker to do, some of the hardest things for them to do is figure out what are all the tools and systems you're using, and then be able to carve up a plan of attack based on that. A SOC 2 gives them all that. They can tell you exactly what tools you're using, where they're set up, where they're located, all this stuff, so I can start to plan out my path of attack. So you don't want to have that publicly on the internet for anybody to get, right? But there does need to be some way to transparently communicate, here's what I'm doing well right now. Here are the controls that I have in place right now. And I think with the more automation we see in compliance and with this information sharing kind of mandate that we see out of this executive order, I think we're going to get closer and closer to it, where you're going to start to see some way that we're able to communicate to third parties the security of our systems or organizations without exposing ourselves to threats, but sharing that information that's needed so that we can move forward and people can feel comfortable about the security of their data and whatever tool they're using.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm a big proponent of transparency, touted everywhere I go. I think transparency breeds trust. And one of the ways to deliver that transparency is through more real-time visibility into your posture. So if this finds a way to do that, then I think it's going to be a huge success. I know the government implemented a continuous monitoring program. I worked for the government a while back, and the best I could say security was paper security. It was just a bunch of paperwork constantly saying this is what we're doing. And as I was leaving the government, we were moving towards more of a continuous monitoring where instead of assessing at a single point in time, there was some type of assessment, some type of scanner, something that constantly demonstrated that that control was working. It only worked for a subset of controls, right? And if we were able to, make that apply to a larger set of controls, the government wins and the rest of, the U.S. citizens win as well. And I think we'll start to see some copycats in other countries. This, in my opinion, is almost the equivalent to what GDPR was in the European Union, in that they throw down the gauntlet. They said, here is our take on privacy and here's what we're doing to protect our citizens. And the U.S. is attempting to do something like that with this executive order, because nothing that I've seen globally, other than maybe China's plan, is as comprehensive and as detailed.
That's a really great point about comparing this to GDPR. I didn't even think of that. That's a really great point. And I think that would be inspiring if that does spark a global wide kind of a deep dive into the cybersecurity practices of each of these different countries, because we're in an interconnected world. So it doesn't matter if you're in France or in the U.S. If you're exposed, you potentially could expose me. So that's a great point, and I hope you're right. I hope we listen to this 2 years from now and we're like, Jarrett called it. He called it and called this and knew this was going to happen. So that's a really good observation.
Right on, man. Well, hey, thank you for joining the show. Thank you for taking the time. We always end our show with a simple question related to, the area of operation that you're in. If someone wants to pursue a SOC 2, what should they do? What's the first thing they should do?
They should reach out to a trusted partner and ask them specific technical questions about your environment. If you are somebody that has your systems hosted on Amazon Web Services, go find a partner that knows Amazon Web Services. You wouldn't go to a heart doctor for a foot problem. So don't go to a non-technical auditor for a technical audit. That's my biggest piece of advice. A lot of times people focus on cost and time in their SOC 2, which is obviously important factors. But a most important factor that's going to help reduce your cost and your time is, does your auditor or partner actually understand the technology that you're using? And not everyone will, and that's perfectly okay, but you can find someone that does understand. If you're hosting on Microsoft's cloud versus Amazon cloud or Google cloud, you want to have people that deeply understand those cloud providers, So I would encourage anyone, as they're doing their Google searches for SOC 2, if they come across Byte Check, definitely click that link. But talk to a partner and say, do you understand the technology that I'm using? And have them explain that. Treat them the same way you would treat hiring someone for a compliance role at your organization. You're going to make sure that they understand your tech stack. So don't hire a third-party auditor that doesn't. That's my biggest piece of advice.
That is wonderful advice and the perfect close to our show. And I'm glad you plugged Byte Check. If you didn't, I would have. The link to Byte Check is going to be in the show notes as well. If you're interested in getting a SOC 2 and you have a SaaS application that you're running or managing, definitely recommend you taking a look at them. Well, AJ, thank you for joining the show. Definitely appreciate it. And you're welcome back anytime.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it. Thanks for the invite.
Thanks for joining us today. If you have any questions or ideas from today's show, share them with us by emailing cyberside@epicglobal.com. Don't forget to follow us on socials. You can find us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram by searching for Epic Global. Until next time, stay cyber smart.